So as you've probably heard by now, Steve Jobs passed away yesterday, October 5th, 2011. And online, there's been a huge outpouring. Facebook and Twitter and Apple put up a very nice page on their site. I and my small tribute have taken Macast.com offline and just put up a simple tribute page. It's, you know, I really didn't know what to do, but I thought that was my small gesture. And that links to Apple's Steve Jobs page that they had posted with a very nice statement, apple.com/Steve Jobs, if you want to take a look at that. And, you know, this is a huge blow to our community. I think many of us knew that this day was coming and just hoped that it would never happen. And when I found out, I actually had this episode of the MacCast pretty much done. It was, of course, about the new iPhone 4S. I sat down and on Tuesday evening and chatted with David Sparks and Ken Ray from macOS Ken. And I was planning to add some feedback from Victor. And literally, Victor and I were sitting down to record the show and we got the news. And at that point, it just didn't seem appropriate to move forward. So I've sort of tabled my conversation with Victor. But that left me with this episode of the MacCast. And I was thinking about what I wanted to do, if I wanted to put out this show or if I needed to do something else, some sort of tribute. And so I kind of stepped back and took last night to think about how I wanted to approach this episode. And the more I thought about it, the more I began to realize that the MacCast in this community that we have is here because of the technology that Apple has provided, that Steve built this ecosystem. I mean, I do this show in GarageBand, and you know, without my Mac, without this technology, this community, none of this would exist. And I really firmly believe that Steve's vision was more than the physical things, the hardware and the software. It was about enabling and empowering users like myself to create things. And so I think the appropriate thing to do is to do just that, to use the technology he gave us to continue to do what we do, to build this community, to have this support system, to create great things and share those things with the world. And I'm noticing designers continuing to do that, artists, music artists and professionals, and just anything that you create with your Mac, I think needs to continue to be thrust out there. And you know, the world doesn't stop. As much as it feels like we should, I think we take a pause. And, you know, I changed the homepage of MacCast.com for a day in tribute. But I think after that, we need to move forward and continue to push things and put stuff out. So in the end, I decided the best thing for me to do would be to just give you the episode that I was going to give you. So I'm adding this little intro as my way of saying thank you, Steve. Thanks to the community, and you know, we're going to continue to use your technology to create great things. So with that, I think that's all I want to say, and here's your MacCast. MacCast, Wednesday, October 5th, 2011. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is a show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Got a great show for you today because Apple finally had their iPhone announcement. It happened on Tuesday, and we now know what we're getting. We're getting an iPhone 4S, and not an iPhone 5, as some people may have thought. A couple new bits of information came out related to iCloud. A new app is in there, and we're going to hear about all of that in this episode. I was able to sit down with Ken Ray from Mac OS Ken and David Sparks from Mac Power Users, MacSparky.com, and just get their thoughts and opinions on sort of how the event went and some of the announcements that were out there. So I'm going to share that with you in this episode. But before we get to that, I want to take a quick moment and thank a couple of our show sponsors. Furonics, makers of Deep Freeze, which is a great application if you have to manage multiple computers. If you're in education, you're in IT, you're in the hospitality industry, you have Macs anywhere that or PCs for that matter, that are in a public space with multiple users sharing a system. Deep Freeze is a product you can use to protect that system, to lower your IT costs. It's really, really great. All you have to do is set up your system, and then before deploying it, you install Deep Freeze, and you can control the areas that people are able to write to that system, what they're able to install. It gives you the ability to protect that system. And the way it protects it is a little bit different than other products. You can let your users have full access to that system. They can install software, they can surf the web, cookies get saved. It's not a locked down system while they're using it. But what you do ahead of time is you sort of define areas that are protected and then areas that are writable. So if you want to set up user folders where users can persist data and documents, that's fine. But maybe you want to protect the applications folder so that any application that gets installed, they can still install the application. But what happens is when you reboot that system, Deep Freeze kicks in and it resets that system back to the original state when you set it up. So any of those protected areas are completely restored. And that's great if you're in the hospitality industry. That means you can set up things so that, you know, cookies and historical browsing data gets wiped away. A lot of hotels use Deep Freeze because that way they can have Macs in their rooms. The service comes in to service the room. They just reboot that system, and it's ready for the next person who's staying in that room. It's really incredible stuff, and they have a lot of information and details on their website. They also have free trials available, so you can check it all out over at furonics.com. And thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. Another sponsor, Gazelle, they have a really interesting service. If you have old electronics, if you have an old iPod, you have an old iPhone, this is particularly relevant right now because if you're planning on getting that new iPhone 4S, you may want to get some cash for your old devices so you can help pay for that. Gazelle makes that really easy and takes away some of the hassles of dealing with classified and online auction sites. Gazelle works very simply. You just go on the website. They have a huge database of electronics, and you do a simple search, and then they kick back an offer for your product. And you get to see that instantly right there on the screen. You just have to answer some simple questions about the condition, the types of accessories you have, but then they'll tell you, hey, we'll give you this much money for that item. And if the item does have value, they'll even pay the shipping, and in some cases, send you a box to send the item in. Now, every once in a while, it'll come back and there'll be a product that maybe doesn't have value. In those cases, they will actually handle the recycling for you. So you can send it in, you'll have to pay shipping, but then they will handle recycling that item responsibly so you don't have to worry about it. They have great partners that are certified, and they use CloudBlue, which is a well-known name in the recycling industry. So you know that it's not going to show up in some landfill somewhere. It's going to be recycled properly. It's a really great service, and you can get cash for your electronics. As far as payments go, they make it really easy. You can get an Amazon gift card, and if you do that, they give you some extra cash. You can have a check. You can have it put into a PayPal account. You can even have it donated to charity if you would like to do that. So you can check it all out. You can get more information, details, and do a product search over at gazelle.com. And a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. So to use Apple's own words, let's talk iPhone. Here is my conversation with Ken Ray and David Sparks. So I've got Ken Ray on the show. Hey, Ken, how you doing?
Doing well, Adam. How are you?
Good. It's good to have you back. I don't think we've chatted in a little while.
I think we did. We did day six back in July, but that was on my side of the fence. So yeah.
Yeah. So
thanks
it's good,
for having.
Good to have you back over here in MacCast territory, and then also Dave Sparks. Hey, Dave, how you doing?
Great, Adam. Thanks for having me on.
hey, Dave was just, we were just together.
Yeah. In, yeah, just this Northern weekend California, in Petaluma.
The MCE, which is a whole lot of fun. If you, it's going to be October 6th. Am I getting the date right? Next year?
I think that's
so they,
right.
They've already got the date planned. It's always the first weekend, first Saturday in October. And if you can make it out, we did a panel there, talked about the future of Apple and their hardware and software. And then each of us had some sessions, and Gene from Smile was there. It's just a whole big fun Apple Geek Fest. So if you're in the Bay Area, anywhere near the Bay Area, it's worth driving out for because it's free. So it's good to see you there had fun. But yeah, then come back, flew back on Monday and right into the thing, I guess, I don't know if we've been waiting for. I was so jaded by the time this event came around. I don't know how you guys felt. I really was. The rumors were just getting to me. And I guess that's a good place to start because, let's start just by kind of analyzing the whole vibe of the event. I want to talk about that a little bit because it seemed like to me that a lot of people were, at least online and on Twitter and stuff like that, some of the comments I was seeing from the community were people were really critical of this keynote. And I think because, Steve Jobs isn't there and it's kind of Tim Cook's first thing, but it seemed to me like people were being a little overly critical. And it might be because for me too, it was hard not to be because the rumor mill had spewed out so much information already that you were really looking for more than I think we should have expected to be getting. I don't know how you felt about it, Ken.
Well, I mean, that's one possibility. The other possibility, though, is fairly late on Tuesday when they had posted the video, still had not, well, it's 11:11 as we record right now, and I don't think they put up the podcast yet, but they've at least put the video up on Apple's site.
Mm-hmm.
I caught on Fortune that it was up, and Fortune said, the good stuff starts at 73 minutes. You've got a problem.
Yes.
At that point. And look, I love listening to Tim Cook on the earnings call, especially when you hit a nerve with Tim Cook. And I don't mean make him angry, but when you sort of rile the bear, right? He is really just stirring to listen to at times. That time was not 10 o'clock this morning on the East Coast. I'm sorry, 10 o'clock this morning on the West Coast, I don't think. I finally started watching some of the video while I was making dinner, and I fell asleep and my face hit the frying pan.
there was a pacing problem, right, Dave? I mean, it did seem like that to me, too. Yeah, the whole thing was like front-loaded with way too much stuff. I think about 40 minutes into it, I was like, oh, wow, they're still doing, a recap of what we already know.
Yeah, there are people who make their living studying speakers and watching their characteristics, and you could take this apart. I mean, when you watch, even just with my basic understanding of that science, you watch me swallowing a lot at the beginning, and he's clearly nervous. And I think they kind of lined it up to give him, kind of his wheelhouse at the beginning, which is, how much money are we making and like how great we're doing. And, Steve Jobs did that too. But it felt to me like they stretched it out longer with this one, maybe to kind of let him kind of get his stride or something. But, at the same time, I don't think that stuff really matters that much. I don't believe that, we bought stuff just because Steve Jobs came out and announced it. I mean, if you want proof, look at the, was the iPad Hi-Fi, the iPod Hi-Fi or the iPod Sock,
Mm-hmm.
Steve Jobs announced those. We didn't buy them. So, I don't know. I think people make more out of this than they need to. But, I guess the other thing you're alluding to is just all these, these expectations that people have. I mean, if you watch the mainstream press on this stuff, they're completely insane. I mean, this morning, one of the local newscasts in Orange County was saying that they believe that Apple had made an exclusive arrangement with Sprint. Like, they're going to stop selling a phone on AT&T and Verizon. Some guy got on the TV and said that.
Well, no, that wasn't the rumor. I can't remember if the rumor was BGR or the Wall Street Journal. And it seems stupid that when it comes to Apple rumors, that we can hold those two, practically even. That part's kind of crazy. But, no, the Sprint exclusivity was supposed to be for the iPhone 5. So yeah. It wasn't they weren't going to sell the iPhone on anything else. It's just everybody else was going to either keep getting the iPhone 4 or they were going to get the iPhone 4S. But Sprint was the one that was going to have the exclusive with the iPhone 5. My favorite, though, and I started off I started off Tuesday's show with this, was the piece in Reuters where Steve Jobs was going to be at the event. Except, of course, he might not be at the event. And it wouldn't be that big deal if he weren't. I mean, yeah.
You handled that very well. I like that.
Thanks. But it's not even a story.
You know, the one weird thing in my mind, did you guys get a chance to watch the video yet and not skip past the first part?
I've only gotten about 25, 30 minutes into it.
Yeah, okay, I watched the beginning to end.
But have you noticed where the camera's positioned on the audience shot sort of from the front?
Yeah, with the empty chair.
And it says reserved. There is that one chair kind of right there on the end in the front row that's just sitting empty. That was the one that kept, I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
Well, either God or Steve Jobs is going to sit in that chair at some point, right?
I was going to say, Clayton is never being invited to anything else again.
Well, and they kept showing it. So then I was like, well, I don't know why they keep showing that chair. It's odd. And probably just some executive, you know, phone executive's plane got delayed or something, and he wasn't able to make it that morning.
Unless it was to rub it into all of our faces who, you know, couldn't be there and couldn't watch a live stream. Hey, look, we got an empty chair and nobody's even using it, and you still can't be here.
Yeah. If you go back to the Engadget live stream, I want to point this out too, just because I think it's such a great image. There's a great image of Ralph De La Vega from AT&T sort of texting on his iPhone, standing right under this giant kind of looming Apple logo over his head, which is it's a greatly framed shot, nice shot. It's worth taking a look at if you need to follow the live stream on Engadget. It was like one of the first photos from sort of inside the event right before they went into the town hall. But
so it says so much, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What do you think then? I mean, there are always weird rumors before an Apple event, but was it just like too long? I mean, did it just take too long for this one? We're used to an iPhone event every June because what we saw today was honestly what was rumored that we were going to see earlier this year. I mean, when people still had their heads about them as far as what the next iPhone announcement was going to be. And then we get down to like 2 weeks before it, and there are going to be three iPhones.
Everybody just starts going crazy. You know, I commented, somebody mentioned, and this is getting back to what I was saying originally, is sort of the air was let out of everything even before the event. It's like a big blockbuster movie, right? When they know the movie is going to tank. And I'm not saying that these announcements tank, but this is the same general idea, right? They know maybe they have something, but it might not be that big. And then they just start promoting the heck out of it like 6 months in advance, right? And they keep just drilling it and drilling it and drilling it. So by the time the movie comes out, it like has to be way more than it is. It could still be a great movie, but they've thrown everything at it from a marketing perspective. Then it just turns out it can never live up to, you know, what the audience wants. And I think the rumor sites really did this this time. And you're right. I don't know if it's because they had this longer lead in or if it's because the iPhone and iOS and iPad, you know, Apple has got such sort of pull in the media these days, you know, in mainstream media, that people were just throwing out crazy stuff. And it was just sort of like, well, I think we just threw every possible rumor at it. And, you know, chances are, two or three of those are probably going to be true, which turned out to be the case, right? So then everybody's going, well, we already knew. Well, no, we didn't. We just knew tons of random guesses, and three happened to be right.
Well, over the weekend when the iTunes build came out with the artwork and the iPhone 4S in it, I thought that was pretty much it. I mean, I figured, okay, that's what we're getting. But I think part of it is the number of people that care now. I mean, if you go back to the original iPhone announcement, how many people really cared that there was a phone from Apple? I mean, and compare that to the millions and millions of people now who are already invested in iOS and have bought apps and love their iPhones. There's just a lot more people involved.
Yeah, here's the real telling thing for me. So my mom, who probably has I'm pretty sure has a feature phone. I don't even know what kind of phone she has. But this was the first time leading up to this announcement where she actually emailed me and said, do you know when the new iPhone is coming out? So that has never happened with any other launch. And I think that just sort of illustrates what you're pointing to, Dave, that there's a lot more people that seem to care when the new iPhone's coming out than there were when the first iPhone was released. Absolutely. So, you know, we probably should just jump right to the iPhone 4 stuff, but just a couple of things that kind of hit me. One thing that I was a little bit disappointed about, well, should we talk about the software? I was going to jump right to the hardware, but, you know, iOS 5, they just kind of rehashed everything that we heard at WWDC, and I think that helped kind of prolong the lead-in to all this stuff. And I complained about that on Twitter, and somebody pointed out to me that maybe rightfully so, that maybe some of that was more for the mainstream media people that were in the audience, though, who maybe didn't cover WWDC, since that's more of a geeky technical thing. So I could kind of buy that they just needed a rundown.
Yeah.
10 features.
A rundown would be one thing. I mean, 73 minutes. And I know it's a funny line, but I mean, seriously, 73 minutes. I mean, that's a long time to wait to get to that. And it's not like Apple just hit, you know, in July. I mean, I don't think there was anybody there today that wasn't already aware of what Apple was doing in June, right? Or paying attention in June. Like I think it would have been hard to get in, not as hard as it would have been to get into today's event, but if you were a member of the mainstream press from somebody like CNN, CBS, ABC, NBC, you know, anybody. I mean, it's still a hard ticket to get for WWDC, right?
Uh-huh.
I don't think, you know, I don't know. To say, I mean, to catch that one person who wasn't paying attention last time but happened to be invited this time to talk to everybody, I'm more curious about why we didn't get the live stream this time that we got before. Now, maybe it would have been 1,000 times worse because all the geeks would have been sitting there going, oh my God, this is like, you know, watching paint dry. The only problem is we were watching, you know, Macworld, if you could get it, a number of blogs I couldn't get onto, which was kind of stunning. But, you know, the blogs that I was watching, I mean, there was a lot of, even with them, there was a lot of ho-humming.
Well,
and, okay, yeah. Look, another review of this. So they didn't do themselves a great service, you know, by only having it be this small number of people, because then you know, the majority of people watching it were going, wow, we heard about that, you know, 3 months ago or 4 months ago.
Well, and it's funny you bring that up, because this conversation kind of came up over this weekend. You know, is Apple going to live stream it, and why wouldn't they? And again, somebody pointed out to me something that I didn't really take into account, and that is that, one, this kind of thing, even in this day and age, still, you know, think we got YouTube and all these services that can stream stuff just fine, and Apple streams from their website all the time. But when an event like this happens, it gets so frenzied, and I think exactly what you're talking about with, you know, everybody's live blog streams going down. I mean, like, every site seemed to get impacted by this one. So again, I think there's a huge audience that's bigger than it ever has been, sort of with all eyes on Cupertino during this. And mm-hmm. It's really, really, really expensive to set up the streaming and do it right through the CDN networks when you have that many people trying to access the stream. So it not only poses technical challenges, but it also poses financial challenges. Now, it's not to say Apple couldn't rise to the occasion, but they have to make a call, right? Are they going to get enough extra press or coverage or whatever they need out of paying for that to sort of justify it? It's easy to forget. I think sometimes at the end of the day, you know, this is Apple's got to make lots of business decisions around these things. I mean, I want the live stream. God, I want the live stream, but
I guess the question I have then, to sort of not counter that exactly, but why did they stream any of them? I mean, the ones that they did stream, I mean, was there an extra $50 tied to that? I don't see why, you know, we had, was it like two events? Not many, but we had a couple of
them.
They
don't do that many, yeah.
I don't know if this really makes any sense, and it may not be any reason at all, but if I was the guy who took over Steve Jobs' job and a presenter like that, and I, it was my first time that I'm going to be filling his shoes, I would want it in the smallest venue possible, and I would not want it live streamed. really, I mean, I would just want to kind of do it and say, okay, I did the first one. Maybe now the next time, you know, get me in a big room and whatnot. But the first one, I just want to eliminate as many problems as possible and just get through it. Yeah, and it kind of felt that way to me today.
I joked about falling asleep while cooking dinner while watching the video, but I mean, really, in fairness, we probably should wait until his third keynote, because I mean, you're right. All eyes, even though they only had 150 people in the room, all eyes were going to be on how he was doing, and you know, so you're right. Maybe give him a few more chances before you say he's just, you know, he's not that.
Well, I don't think he's ever going to be the pitch man that Steve Jobs is, but there aren't many people in the world that are. Wow. But that doesn't make him a bad CEO.
Are there any? I don't know that there are any.
I know that ShamWow guy used to be pretty good.
That's true. Got to hire.
Could just see him up there.
Former
infomercial guy. We got your 4S right here. Got your 4S.
Well, so somewhat related to this streaming thing is that, you know, Apple sometimes isn't technically great at that stuff. And do you guys notice, like, right after the keynote, and I guess there's maybe some other reasons for this, some sort of DNS hacking, hijacking things going on. But I mean, even Apple's site was like seriously down right after the keynote. So,
I said David, because I'm hoping he understood more about that than I did when we were talking about it earlier.
I tried to talk about it on the roundtable and I sounded like a complete moron.
you knew the words. Dude, I had no idea what you were saying.
The thing I can't get over, and one of the points I think it's important, is, you know, Apple's got this big cloud initiative, and I think they really need to get this right. And it's kind of, you know, they're not willing to stream. Their website goes down after the big presentation. I mean, it's all these are like little things that are not really indicative of a company that's ready to take on the internet. But
they have a giant building with lots of servers.
They do.
I guess they use them for something, right?
It has at least one row of servers. That's all we're allowed to see.
Oh, that's true. That's all we've seen. It's just like a big Hollywood facade.
Yeah.
It's like giant building with nothing in it. No. But I mean, let's talk.
After he took the job, you think? So he gets to take a look at the North Carolina data center for the first time and says, really? Because I thought there would have been more of these here. No?
Yeah. Well, what are all these hamsters doing here?
Exactly. Can somebody get Steve on the phone? No, we can't get Steve on the phone. Okay, good. This is great. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about iCloud. And again, this was the next part of the presentation. They just kind of rehashed most of the stuff. So two things that I want to touch on here. One will be just the new feature. I'm curious to get your guys' take on the whole Find My Friends thing. And then let's talk a little bit about, David, sort of what you brought up, which is, you know, is Apple ready to kind of do this iCloud services thing? So starting with the Find My Friends, because that was a new thing we had not heard about in iCloud, which I guess is kind of like a friends and family location service. So your phone's going to tell you where your friends and family are. And the first thing I thought is, well, shouldn't I always know where my family is?
Well, I don't know. As a parent of a teenage daughter, I'm all for it. Just let me say that.
Yeah, no, I say that jokingly. But it seems like what I like about this is I don't think it's something that's intended to be like, you know, Foursquare, although the comparisons are going to be there. But I think this is a real personal form of sort of people in your family and your closest friends, or if you're having a get together, you can kind of set this up and then know where people are. And it has some nice sort of privacy features, it seems like, built into it, where I can set whether I'm sharing or not by sort of a time frame, or just temporarily say, okay, I want to share my location on this day between these hours because I know I'm going to this, you know, public event or party. So, you know, like Macworld or something might be great for this, is you could set it up for the whole time you're in Macworld and let people see you, but then it automatically sort of turns off either at night or after the event has ended or something like that. And then I guess on the parent side, your teenagers might not like this, but I guess you can make it so they can't turn it off on their phone.
Yeah, there are parental controls. I don't think I'll need that for my daughter. She's okay. But
pretty responsible.
But the idea of just, you know, knowing where they're at is, I think, a great thing. There are limits to it. You know, everybody's talking about how this is terrible and it's an invasion of privacy. Well, it's up to you. You can turn this on or turn it off. As I understand, it's an app. You don't even have to really load the app.
Yeah.
Right.
So I don't really see that as a problem. And I guess there is some potential for abuse here, but I think that's really, consumers need to be smart about what they do with that. I mean, you've got to decide who you're going to share that information with. I mean, it's going to be a very short list for me, but I think it would be very useful for that short list.
I doubt it's on by default.
Yeah.
Then they'll have a problem. But yes, so there's that.
I'll tell you what, if someone figures a way to hack it and get people without their consent, then, Ricky Ricardo would say there's going to be some splaining to do, but I don't think they understand that.
So I don't know. There's much more to add to that. Yeah. I don't know if you have anything, Ken, just kind of another feature.
No, just the fact that, the fact that it is an application. I mean, if you're freaked out by that, you can sort of go back to last year's argument. If you're freaked out by the fact that somebody's going to know where you are, don't get a smartphone. But the Find My Phone, it is an application, so you never have to download it. You're right. Like you said, if it came, turned on by default, that would be bad. I would imagine that this was probably something at some point that Apple thought, hey, we should put this in iOS 5. And then when there was the whole location logging fiasco last year, I would imagine then somebody said, hey, you know what would be better? We should put it in the App Store.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be able to complain.
I like that.
If they download it and put it on their phone and then sue, well, they just wasted a lawyer's time. Whereas, if it came on the phone, there are three lawsuits waiting to happen the second you put iOS 5 there, because I never said you could track me.
And the subtle thing about the parental controls is not only can you control that the kids can't turn the feature off, but also that they cannot share their phone with anyone. So you could really lock it down. So if you were concerned about your children, you could make it so they couldn't share their information, even though the app is on the phone. So only you see where they're going and nobody else does, I think is good.
That's very good. But let's talk about the bigger thing. Obviously, the point behind all this is Apple is stepping up its game when it comes to cloud. And the big question is, for Apple, is that a good thing or not? They historically have not pulled cloud off very well. And they seem to be doing it a little bit differently than, say, Google or Dropbox or some of the other services. It seems a lot more, to me, focused around syncing. And I'm not sure how I feel about that. It seems like they're pushing things out to devices. And it's unclear to me how the control is going to work. Do either of you know?
No.
Yeah.
We'll find out in a couple of weeks, I guess. But the thing I feel is that I think this is critical to Apple's success. They have built this whole ecosystem around the hardware devices. And now I think, what they need is eye glue. They need a way to tie it all together. And I think I'm okay with their model, their app-based model of syncing, because it makes so much more sense for normal humans as opposed to us nerds. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people don't even understand what the Finder is or how to get to stuff. The Apple syncing model, document syncing, is just you open the app and it's there, and you open the app on a different platform or different device, it's there too. There's nothing involved, which is great. The thing that worries me is that, I'm not sure, can they deliver or not? And, I was watching the presentation today and I wanted more about iCloud, a report about what they've done to make sure that we don't have another kind of mobile me explosion at the beginning of this. And all we got was just saying, oh, we've got this iCloud thing and it's going to be awesome. Now let's move on. And I wanted more. I'm not sure if I was in their shoes, I would have given any more, but I just felt like there should have been more about it.
I think I must forget what happened with Mobile Me, because I've always been a big Mobile Me fan, but maybe it's because I only use specific services and they seem to just, for the most part, work for me. Like, syncing. I rely on contact syncing and calendar syncing and on all these things, and that's never been a problem. And I know people who use the email. I'm not heavily reliant on my Mobile Me email. I use Gmail, and I know it's had some outages and things like that, and there's been some downtime. But in general, I've been overall happy, at least with the syncing stuff, which when they start saying a lot of this stuff is dependent on syncing, then I'm thinking, they've done that, in my opinion, okay. It's maybe not the best service in the world, but it works for me. Never really had a problem. And I definitely am in agreement with you, David. I think the idea that, I'm working on a Pages document on my Mac, I save it to my documents in the cloud, and then, I get to the coffee shop and, I want to do a quick edit. I want to add something to that paragraph. I can whip out my iPhone, open up Pages on the iPhone and boom, there's my document. I open it up, I add the edit, and then when I get back home, oh, lo and behold, it's already updated on the version that's on my desktop. You know, I don't have to think about it. I know when I launch Pages, there's all my Pages documents. And I do think for you know, mere mortals and average people, that's going to be a nice way to keep your documents sort of organized and together.
Can I ask a question that you guys might not know the answer to, but I actually recently found an occasion to use versions for Pages with Lion. Is that going to work with iOS 5? So I'm working on my Mac at home and I go to the coffee shop and then I change something and then I, you know, save it to my documents in the cloud and then I come back home and I realize, nah, that was crap fueled by too much caffeine. I want to go back to the original one.
It's a very good question. you would hope so.
Yeah, and I don't think we can know the answer yet because although Apple has released betas of the iOS apps of the iWork apps for iOS, as things stand, at least as far as I know, the current iWork versions on the Mac do not support it. So you don't really know.
Well, they don't support the documents in the cloud.
Yeah, I mean, even on the betas, as far as I can tell. I mean, we're a week away, so I guess we'll find out. But I would suspect that it would not, but that's just speculation.
Yeah, the one thing that gives me pause is that I do know the versions feature itself is reliant on the hard drive that you're saving the documents onto being formatted in HFS Plus format. And if they're not, like if you have a thumb drive that's using FAT32, you know, the Windows file system that you can read right to on the Mac, which is how most like USB sticks come formatted and how most people use them because they just plug them into their Mac and start using them. They don't reformat them with disk utility. When you save a versioned document to that, it'll actually warn you and tell you that it's only going to save the last version of it because it can't. That little file, it basically gets all saved to a little file on the root of whatever volume you're saving onto, the version information. So it can't write that in any other file system other than HFS Plus. So depending on what they're using on their servers, and most servers don't, as far as I know, like big, you know, enterprise level servers don't tend to use HFS Plus, but I mean, it is Apple's system, so they could be using that.
Yeah. I mean, if they're going to make versions a giant selling point of everything that they're doing with Lion and they're going to make iOS 5 and all of the iCloud integration, a big part of Lion as well, there should be some sort of, I mean, even if it only, you know, even if it only caches like 5 versions of it or something like that.
Yep.
There should be something, you know,
I think you're hitting on the larger question that we all have is this is the type of thing where Apple will have not, you know, historically not thought for whatever reason about this detail, which is just so weird because when you think about how they do hardware and how they do the desktop operating system and things like that, they are in that minutia, you know, it's like really important to them, all these little minor details. But this is the type of thing when for some reason when they get into these cloud initiatives, they go, oh yeah, we didn't do that.
Well, I wouldn't. There's a lot of smart people there. I'm sure they've thought about a lot of these things. But my guess is they're also Apple, and they're going to, if they get anything, they're just going to try and get it right that it works, you know, on the most fundamental level first, you know. And maybe it doesn't have versioning in it when it comes out. But if it doesn't have versioning, but it still syncs seamlessly and gives me that Dropbox-like experience where I just open it and it's done and I don't have to think about it, that's a win in my book.
Yeah, but Dropbox has versions.
Yeah.
The other thing, though, is, I mean, how many versions do you need when you're out and about, right? So, like going with your coffee shop example, I sort of set up a bad scenario because I said I go out, I change it in the coffee shop, and then I come back home and I decide what I did there was crap. Well, on my Mac, I've still got all the versions because, as you said, all the versions are saved, you know, to the hard drive.
Assuming you saved it. So you're going to save it locally and then it's going to upload to the cloud. So the other thing they could do is they could take the Dropbox approach too, though, and have some sort of version system through the, because they're still going to have a web interface as far as I know. So you could have a web interface for those documents, and they could be saving in a different way through a database or some other method, the different versions, a la how Dropbox does it. So, you know, I to get a version of the Dropbox file, I believe I have to go into Dropbox's web interface and review those and bring those back. So
can I ask both of you guys a question just out of curiosity? Mm-hmm. Assuming, and I'm gonna try to eliminate the first one. I was going to say, what are you most excited about with next Wednesday and with iOS 5 and iCloud? Or what are you going to try first? Now, the first thing we're all going to try is actually downloading it, right? And I'll be curious to see how that goes. But like, of all the stuff that you've heard about with like notifications and you know, the whole syncing all over the place and scan. Well, iTunes Match is not going to be available until late October, but. Like, what's the thing that you've been waiting for? What are you most excited about seeing happen? Like, what are you going to be playing with Wednesday?
I like the notifications, and I will be excited if the iCloud delivers, because I think that can, it just opens up a lot of possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think notifications. I'm really, as goofy as it sounds, and I don't even think I'll use this feature this much, but I think that it's a big deal for a lot of people, especially with what the carriers are doing surrounding SMS, is I'm excited to see how iMessage works and how that seamlessly sort of flops over. And since I only have like a Wi-Fi iPad, it's going to be really fun to be able to sort of suddenly get text messages on my iPad. You know,
well, it doesn't work even if you have a 3G iPad now. You don't get messages, so... It's going to be great on either device.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. That should be a lot of fun. I forgot about that. I'm hoping it's not like FaceTime where, you know, I was like, hey, that'll be fun. And then I've used it twice. And
then you never use it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I will on the iPad because, you know, I very often, especially in the evening when I'm just sitting there in front of the TV, I have my iPad. I don't have my iPhone really anywhere near me. So it'll be cool to have a text message come in and like, oh, there's a text message. And then for, you know, my friends, most of them have iPhones or iPod touches or something like that, then to have it flip over and then not be using up my SMSs, which I have the limited ones. And I think I'm grandfathered in, if I'm right, right? I have the 200 plan, which I think I get to keep, but we'll see how long that lasts.
And, you know, I was thinking of my answer to that question, Ken. The fact that I'm really excited about seeing if I can share documents between multiple devices just indicates how lame I truly am.
Well, I mean, notifications is just as lame an answer, though. I think that's the one that I'm most excited about. And it's like, well, what am I doing? I mean, you know,
really, I need to get out more.
Exactly. I need to be told without hitting unlock. Okay.
I think I need an iBike.
I think what am
I? Well, you know, I think it's telling that was it Scott Forstall during the keynote said he was like just thrilled about tabbed browsing in Safari. I mean, can we get more boring a feature? But it is a very important feature to a lot of people.
I forgot about
it. You could have told Scott he could have downloaded some of these other apps and he didn't need to bother.
But you know what I mean? It's funny is I don't know that anybody is really excited about, or I wasn't really excited about reminders until that other thing that we'll kind of save talking about to the end.
Okay.
Yeah. So anything else? Yeah, that was my teaser for everybody.
A surprise party? I have no idea. What you're referring to.
Oh, you don't? Well, then you'll be pleasantly surprised along with the audience.
All right.
So anything else with iCloud, Dave, that you wanted to touch on? Just the general
I think
concerns.
Everyone that's listening to this should go outside and take a knee, you know, and pray to the iCloud gods wherever they are that they shine down on Apple and make it work for us next week.
This is the thing. This is my thing with it. It is either there's only two directions this can go. It's either they launch it and it works great and it's hugely successful, or it's like just a big giant fiasco. I don't know that there's going to fall in any kind of middle ground because people have been so critical of them in the past. I don't think they get second chances on this one, but I think they know it.
Right? I don't think even a company with $70 billion in the bank can predict everything that can go wrong with this kind of a rollout. and I'm sure that they've spent a lot of money trying to avoid them all. And so it's likely that there are going to be hiccups as this gets started, but I do think they're going to get it right eventually. And the only way you get good at it is just to start doing it.
But they have been doing it is the problem. I mean, iTools, I forget when I got iTools, but that was in the 90s, if I'm not mistaken. I'd have to go back and check my Apple trivia. I always forget, you know, I'm not good with time frames, but I mean, we've had iTools and .Mac and MobileMe, and I mean, they've been, I mean, if you want to say they were in the cloud back then, I mean, you probably could make the argument for it. They've just never, and you can't even say they haven't done anything major, because I think MobileMe and .Mac and those services, I mean, those are some pretty significant services. And again, I think it's easy to get uber critical, but I think in general for me, I mean, I've been using a lot of that stuff and it really works. And even like iDisk, I know people have been critical of iDisk, but I used it a lot more when I was doing my presentation this weekend, because I did a thing on iPad beyond web and email, and iDisk was a big part of that. So I used it a little more heavily than I had in the past, and it worked great.
Well, you know why? Because everybody abandoned their iDisk storage and went over to Dropbox.
All right. So let's talk a little bit real quickly just about the iPod hardware. They didn't update the Shuffle. They did an update to the Nano and the iPod Touch. And you know, they made it sound like a lot of people have been spelling or trying to predict doom for most of the iPods. We didn't get an update to the Classic, but that wasn't surprising. It didn't go away like a lot of people thought it might. Still there, still the same model, which is good. I think there's still a market for it, and I don't see any reason for Apple to just blanket discontinue it. But iPods are still sounding like it's still a significant part of their business. I mean, they spent a little bit of time on it, and you know, I don't know. The Nano updates to me seemed like they were mostly just cosmetic sort of fun things, right? Just bigger icons, kind of new interface, the improved fitness stuff, and watch faces.
I can tell you one thing. My wife, who has no interest in a Nano, who didn't even know that they existed until today, saw the picture of the Mickey Mouse one and says, oh, I definitely need one of those.
But she's a Disney fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and they're cheaper now, $129 for the 8 gig and $149 for the 16 gig. So that's good.
Is that really, that's the only price difference, $20?
They were already cheap, pretty relatively cheap before.
Yeah, but I mean, $20 for 16, $20 more for 16 gigs as opposed to 8 gigs, really?
Oh, yeah.
That's just, okay.
It's only the special iPhone memory that costs $100, Ken. You got to understand that.
Well, no, but
you know, yeah, not like it's all the same chips. Oh,
maybe
wait.
The $129, you know, device just to get people to look at it. But I can't imagine, you know, who's going to go, nope, $129. I only need 8. Do you know what I mean?
You got a point. Good. Yeah, it seems like it should be. And they could have that be $99 and it would still be significantly higher than the $49 Shuffle to sort of offset it.
The thing is, if you made it $99, then I think you would sell a lot more of them than you would sell $129 to $149. I mean, I'm wondering, though, if they're only running like a quarter of the $129 machines as opposed to the $149. Because if you get to a point where you're going to spend $129 on this landlocked device, I mean, it doesn't do the apps thing. It doesn't do the Wi-Fi thing. It doesn't do all that stuff. If you get to the point where you're going to spend $129 on what's, you know, pretty much still a single purpose device, then I think you're going to spend $149.
Well, then I think you probably hit the exact thing from Apple's, you know, sales team was probably like, hey, if we price this at $129 and we only make 1/10 of the number of them, they're the same form factor, right? It's just like,
right.
It's an extra chip or different chip in terms of the memory. I don't know if there's, you know, I don't know what the board looks like. If look at the iFixit teardown, but yeah, you make 1/10 the number. So $129 kind of gets them in the door, and then they realize, hey, I can have double the storage. You make $20 more on every sale.
Right. Plus, if you accidentally run out of, and I'm not saying they would do it on purpose because I think this would actually run afoul of legal issues, but if they run out of $129 devices, people don't leave at that point.
Right.
They might be bummed, but they'll go ahead and spend the $20 extra. It's not like, you know, well, we had one of these TVs for $50, but we only have, you know, these other 50 for $125 now. I mean, so yeah, it's just kind of weird to me.
Weird or genius.
Well, maybe that is the reason that they do it. I don't know. I didn't realize, though, that they're so close in price, because at that point, I mean, it's like you were saying, Dave, it's, you know, it's the $100 for the extra memory where you're like, I could live without the wall.
Yeah, I think the reason is for the iPhone, you actually need four times as many unicorn tears to make that extra memory.
is that what it is?
Yes.
Well, speaking of unicorn tears, I was probably crying because the iPod Touch, I'm very disappointed. I wasn't this disappointed, but I was disappointed that they didn't add 3G to the iPod Touch, specifically because I'm very excited about iMessage, and I just think it's time that the Touch has the ability to have always-on internet. I think Wi-Fi is not enough for it anymore. And since they have the iPads with 3G, I don't understand why they couldn't have an iPod Touch with 3G.
Don't you think there has to be something with AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint? I mean, that they wouldn't do that?
It's more data. I mean, it's more data money. It's more, you know, more stuff coming to their bottom line. You got all those teenagers whose parents won't buy them a phone for whatever reason, and want them to have, you know, and the teen wants texting and stuff like that. It seems like an ideal market, but maybe I just don't understand that space well enough.
Well, I mean, the problem is, though, forgive me really quickly. The problem is, though, it's also Google Voice and it's Skype and it's alternatives to telephony. I mean, they still make a boatload of money off of, you know, voice minutes, whether people actually use that many voice minutes or not. They still make a ton of money off that. And so even if you are adding to the data, I mean, there's the possibility that you're losing, what is it, $70? It's somewhere between $50 and $70 to run an iPhone. I mean, there's a possibility that you're losing that if you're only going to be charging either $15 or $25 a month for the data.
I think you're already losing that, though, because I think those types of people, you know, they're getting an iPod Touch and then they're getting some sort of pay as you go, you know, cheap phone bit.
I think it really comes down to money. I think that the whole point of that thing is to get it to $200. And, you know, they didn't put an A5 chip in it either. And, you know, so if you think you've got to put an extra radio in there, an antenna, so you get to re-engineer it and space, whatever else you need to get 3G, it's probably going to get a little bit fatter.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's going to, you know, they don't sell a subsidy for that. You don't have a carrier that's helping pay for it. So, you know, the user is buying that thing for the full price. And I think they realize if they can't keep it at $200, they're not going to sell as many of them.
That's the reason. I mean, that's ultimately, it's probably you're right. It's probably a size thing and a price point thing. Cause I didn't even think about that. Cause the iPads are what, $150 more for the 3G versions. Is that right?
130, yes. I think.
130. Yeah.
So that's a significant change, but it just seemed like, so the crying part is like, okay, there's an iPod Touch and it's white. Yay. It's exactly the same one, right? I mean, the same same price point, same sizes. So, and why they give it a release date, I don't know. I guess you can get the white one on October 12th.
In theory.
as long as they remember how to make white.
Yeah.
This year.
All right. So let's quickly get on to the main event, the iPhone 4S. And I'm just going to run down the specs because I think most people by the time they hear this will have heard the specs. But dual core A5, double the speed, faster graphics. I was surprised they have improved battery. So it looks like an extra hour of talk time, up from 7 to 8 hours. Even though there's no problem with the antennas, they redesigned them. They now have two. So you can send and receive calls better. It kind of switches. I guess it's got some smart switching to switch between them. Faster. I thought this was really interesting, if you guys want to comment on this. So HSDPA Plus, which is AT&T's sort of fastest version of HSDPA, I think has a theoretical maximum download speed of 14.4, and the new iPhone 4S will support that. So Apple was kind of arguing that, you know, this version is as fast as most of the phones their competitors are putting out as 4G phones. And I think Phil even said he believes in some real world cases it could be better. I think that's a little bit of a red herring. I don't buy that. I don't know if you guys know much about these technologies, but I've been kind of watching some of the speed tests of the 4G phones, and most of them are falling in that download speed, but they're falling in the mid-range of the 4G download speeds. And they can go faster. Like Computer World did a test, and they had Verizon's LTE 4G go up to like 26.1 megabits per second, which is basically double or close to double the theoretical maximum download speed of the HSDPA Plus. And I wouldn't expect that you would even get that speed on that. So we might actually start to get 7.2 down, which is the maximum of the current iPhone 4.
It seems like they're trying to say, you know, they have four slow 4G and we have fast 3G.
That's exactly right.
And I do know that I want a phone where the battery is going to work all day. And I think every person I know that has a 4G phone has this problem where they like turn the phone off when they're not making calls because the battery won't make it. So I get it. I think Apple's making the smart move here, but I think comparing it to 4G, I guess I'll be curious to see the results of those tests.
Well, they're doing the right marketing thing. And I thought it was funny that the one that Phil Schiller's like, we don't want to go into all the details about this stuff, but here's the facts.
I loved it. It was like, I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
It's pretty much what he said from the stage. Like, you know, we could debate it.
But you know, here's what I hear. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, that's what it felt like he was saying. It's like, yeah, we could debate this if you want to. But what I'm hearing is we'll be about as fast as they are. And let's go on from there. And in fairness,
our phone works at dinner time. I mean, that's what he should have said.
Right. But, in fairness, that's exactly what Apple has always done, though, right? I mean, it's the whole, I mean, they want to make a system that works, not a system that's the fastest or the system that's the, you know, whatever. I mean, they don't, it's what we always talk about with the different tablets. They're not trading on specs. They're trading on the fact that the thing works.
That kind of raises a good point, though. I mean, just if you look at those three data points, the way they gloss over the antenna change, the way they talk about these speeds. I mean, you know, don't kid yourself. I mean, they have gone over every moment of that presentation and everything is carefully crafted.
Okay, so let's contrast that now. I want to contrast that now. So, and the other thing, it's a world phone, which is good. One phone, GSM, CDMA. But so the contrast to sort of those facts, right, is then they turn around and talk about the camera, which is amazing, and that's where we get all the specs, right? It's just like, then they're not afraid to talk about the specs because they know they're going to hold up. You know, 8 megapixel, yeah. You know, great resolution. They've got all this processing technology they can do because of the A5 processor, so it's got, you know, something called a hybrid IR filter, which basically just means it's going to take better color on your photos. They went into details like, we've got 5 lenses instead of 4. It's a 2.4, so it's a wider aperture, and all the details of the backside sensor, backlit sensor. What do they call that thing? I always get that mixed up. In essence, meaning you're going to get more light to this tiny sensor, which is going to result in better pictures. But they definitely went into all the technical bullet points on their new camera sensor. So yep. I found that an interesting contrast.
Well, I mean, they can afford to, right?
Exactly. It's like when the specs behoove us, we're definitely going to dive into it. But when you might be able to call them into question, I mean, it's great market. I mean, this is classic marketing 101, right?
Right.
You could study this.
Here's the thing. I mean, you're right. What you said a minute ago, David, is absolutely true. I mean, they have parsed every word that was going to be said. Now, I think one of them, and I can't remember which one because it was just words from a live blog at the time. But one of them said something about the ability to stream the music that's coming from, you know, iTunes Scan or iTunes Match. Well, no, you can't. So that was obviously a goof. But they have to be really careful when they're talking about 4G. I mean, they can't say it's as fast. They have to say something like, I hear it's as fast. Because you can't prove that you never heard that. But you can't say it is as fast because that gets you, you know, that gets you in all kinds of trouble.
I would almost guarantee you some lawyer looked at exactly what Schiller was going to say there and talked to him about it.
Sure. Because, I mean, because you don't want to open yourself up to the possibility of, you know, legal stuff. You know that better than I do. The other thing is you don't want to open yourself up to Samsung saying, well, they say theirs is 4G, but guess what? Or they say it's as fast, but, you know, that whole compare and contrast when they put two phones together and, you know, try to go to some site. As if that proves something, as if the way that I get to TMZ is going to determine, or how fast I can get to it, is going to determine whether or not this is the best phone for me.
Yeah, another time I thought of that was when Forrestal was talking about the Siri, and he said, you know, tell me how the NASDAQ is doing today. He didn't say tell me how Apple stock is doing, because everybody knows when you have one of these keynotes, the stock always dumps for an hour or two. And they didn't look at that. They just looked at the NASDAQ, you know.
I thought that was clever. Yeah.
I want to break his stride in the middle of it. Tell me how Apple is doing today. Oh, will you guys excuse me for a moment? Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah. You mentioned the streaming thing, and there's no way you could have known this, but Ken, it sounds like Apple did a reversal on the whole streaming thing, because I caught that too. I think it was Eddie Q said, streaming from the cloud, and mm-hmm. then one of my listeners tweeted out that apparently Apple had sort of changed direction on that and pointed to Apple's new iTunes What's New page. And under the iCloud section, they are saying streaming now.
Really?
It says right in the Apple's page, once your music is in iCloud, you can stream and store it on to any of your devices. So apparently now it is streaming, although it technically really isn't. At least as far as I understand it being implemented, it's like a progressive download. But they're now marketing has decided that it's okay to say it's streaming.
You know, Adam, when you mentioned Eddie Q, I thought, and I'm sure the guy's brilliant, you don't become a senior vice president at Apple unless you're pretty smart, but I thought his presentation was the worst of all of them today.
Hmm.
And I can't really put my finger on it why. I think I need to watch it again.
Interesting. I thought he was the most lively of the bunch.
I'm not sure what it was. It just didn't feel right to me.
Certainly the most animated.
Were either of you watching... I listened to Twit's coverage of it in another browser while I was reading a couple of the live blogs.
It was airing out for me, so I don't know what
they happened. Okay, so CNN does this thing, and I kind of wish I had thought to do this, except I didn't want to be 15 minutes behind. But what CNN does is they actually videotape whatever presentation. They did it for WWDC, they did it for whatever, I think the iPad 2 presentation. And they did it today. And they'll fill up a tape, or they'll get like 15 minutes of a tape, and then they will literally run that tape out to the truck. And they'll upload it, and they start streaming the event before it's even over. And I thought they were going to get in trouble for it, but apparently not, because this is the third time in a row that I know of that they've done it. And so Twit at one point, and this is, let me just back up. We need to give Tim Cook at least three chances, okay? Twit at one point cuts to the video from CNN, and they're all like, oh, it's frozen. And then Tim Cook just moves his hands almost imperceptibly. And suddenly everybody's like, wait a minute, it's not frozen. And it turns out it was just he wasn't moving.
That's kind of funny.
I mean, because seriously, when you watch the video, you thought, yeah, no, this isn't working. And it turns out it was working just fine. And it really sounds like I'm making fun of him. I'm not. I am. Okay. I'm making fun of the situation. He didn't trip over anything. He didn't break anything. He didn't give away the company. He didn't give away any company secrets. Man, I would not want to be the first guy. You almost think they should have hired somebody, right? Like, you know, maybe get Noah Wyle back or you know.
Kawasaki,
an impersonator.
Yeah. Impersonator, even. That'd be fine. You know, somebody could really act the part.
John Gruber is the one who said this first. But, you know, the pitch man doesn't need to be the CEO. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, there are people there, I'm sure, that could do a better job.
Yeah. But except in Apple's case, or at least in this case, it had to be. Had to be Tim Cook, because people had to see, you know, continuity, right?
Make sure he's wearing pants, you know. not drooling on himself. Okay.
Yeah.
He's got $70 billion in the bank. Let's make sure the guy knows what he's doing.
Well, yeah, I think if nothing else, just the announcement today should kind of show the world that these guys still know what they're doing, and Apple's still going to keep chugging along, you know, as they always have. It may not be as dynamic a presentation of the information, but it was still, we got a lot of really great stuff, and it was presented good enough, I believe, for most people to see that. So just kind of finishing up the specs. So the other thing on the camera, improved video, 1080p, which a lot of people have been really wanting for a long time, and they can now, because of the processor, do more processing. So you got the image stabilization stuff like on iMovie, which is in real time. So I guess even in some ways better than iMovie, and additional noise reduction. So it's going to be great for shooting video. And good thing, because they added a 64 gigabyte model now. So you now have 16, 32, and 64, starting at $199 and going up to $399 in $100 increments. And that's, of course, for the subsidized versions of the phone. And then I found it interesting that they kept around the 3GS. That surprised me. I didn't see that coming, but that's going to be now their free phone on subsidized carriers. And then the iPhone 4 becomes the new $99 phone, which is the position the iPhone 3GS held before this. And then the new iPhones are coming out in October. October 7th is the pre-order date, and then release date on the 14th in 7 countries: US, Canada, Australia, UK, France, Germany, and Japan. And then 22 countries after that on October 28th, and then 70 countries total by the end of the year, which is, that's amazing. That's a really fast rollout for Apple in terms of a new device, I think, globally.
You know, while a 128 gigabyte iPod Touch would have made sense to me, a 64 gig iPhone makes no sense to me.
I think it makes a lot of sense if you're going to be shooting video.
Yeah, I guess.
1080p HD video on your phone, you're going to need some storage. That's the one I might end up getting, because I have a 32 now, and it's pretty full.
Okay.
Just with apps, I don't know.
It's also, I mean, for a lot of people, an iPod Touch or an iPhone isn't either or. I mean, you know, they want to be able to carry as much music as they possibly can, but still only carry one device.
Yeah.
Well, you certainly have to think about it more, with $100 being the difference between the different storage sizes, I think.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But, you know, on the 3GS thing, I think that, to us nerds, it's kind of a throwaway line, but I think to a lot of people, it's a big deal. I mean, I was thinking about, you know, people I know who will just go into the phone store and say, okay, what's available for free?
Well, and it's probably my answer to the lack of a, you know, 3G iPod Touch, right?
Yeah. There, for the contract.
It's free, right? Instead of $200. So,
yeah.
You know, your contract's probably going to cost you more than that. But, and we still had all those rumors about pay as you go. I mean, I wonder if it'll be at some point available for those kind of pay as you go plans.
What, the 3GS?
Yeah.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh.
If you could pay, you know, maybe you have to pay for it at that point, $100, $150, but now you can do pay as you go. I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see, and this is really geeky, I apologize. It'll be interesting to see, and then at the end of the next quarter, what the average selling price for an iPhone is. That's the only way we're going to be able to remotely figure out, you know, what kind of subsidy they're getting for the 3GS right now, because somebody, I can't remember who, might have been Munster, it might have been somebody else. One of the analysts said recently that Apple is basically getting $600 for an iPhone, be that an iPhone 3GS or an iPhone 4. But now we're going to have three phones out there and more price points for the top of the line. So that might sort of obscure it a little bit, but there's no way they're getting $600 for a free iPhone at this point. I mean, that subsidy has to have come down. I'd be kind of curious what that is.
I doubt it. So
you'd have to think that with the number of years they've been making that 3G/3GS body, that they've got that down to a science where it costs them very little money to manufacture those phones. I mean, it's got the smaller screen. It's got, I mean,
only 8 gigs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I forgot to mention both the iPhone 4 and the 3GS are only 8 gig models.
Right, but I mean, if you're going to someplace, like if you're going to take it, not only the prepaid plans on like Verizon or AT&T, but if you're going to take it like to a Metro PCS or to a Cricket or something like that, it's going to have to be an affordable phone. Mm-hmm. Not just affordable for a smartphone. It's going to have to be an affordable phone. And so, like, what that would end up costing would be kind of it'd be neat to know.
Would be neat to know. So that thing that I was alluding to earlier, Ken.
Yes.
Is Siri.
Oh.
Which, to me, that was the star of the show.
Not my surprise party, then.
No.
Okay.
And Siri is the technology that Apple bought. It was currently an app. It looks like it's been discontinued now, and they might be shutting the service off. I noticed I launched the app today, and there's a warning. It says something about it moving to its new home on October 14th.
Now, you say warning. It's actually very chipper about it.
It is.
It actually says, oh, I've got a new home. I'm going there on the 15th. Until then, how can I help you?
Right. Does that? But it doesn't literally let you know. Are they going to just like flip a switch on the 14th and everybody who doesn't have an iPhone 4S, that app's now useless?
Boy, it sure sounds like it.
It does to me, too. You're going to have some unhappy people who have the app.
And I've been trying to think about, I've been thinking about that because I've got a lot of listeners to the live show who have called in and said that they do that, that they use Siri quite a bit and that they really love it. And I hope they're planning on getting an iPhone 4S because if they're planning on, you know, continuing to use it, it sounds like they're going to have to. The only reason I can think that Apple could justify that is because Siri is now going to talk to you. It's going to say stuff back to you as opposed to just popping it up on your screen.
Well, and I hadn't played with it, you know, so today caused me to open up Siri again. I used Siri early on and I kind of didn't grok it. And then I saw the demos today and I'm like, oh, okay, I kind of understand it more. And so right. I was just trying some of the things, and it doesn't have the integration, obviously, with Apple's apps, which I think that's the killer thing that Apple has brought to it, is full integration with the built-in stuff like the address book and the Google Maps and the reminders and all these sorts of things. But on the surface, for people who hadn't seen Siri, who don't have the app, who haven't seen the demo, I mean, what's amazing is it's voice recognition, but then coupled with language, natural language parsing, which is what the other phones don't have. You have to kind of, with other phone voice systems, you have to learn these sort of archaic, you know, like keywords. You have to say certain things in certain ways to get it to do what you need it to do. Whereas with Siri, you just sort of tell your phone, hey, I'd like to send a text message to Ken, and then you relay your text message and it does it. Or please set an appointment for lunch with David on Friday at 1:30 or 12:30, whatever it ends up being. And then what's cool is it's also contextual, so you can sort of build one command on top of another, which is just unbelievable. And then it uses that to kind of determine what you're doing next. So if you're setting an appointment for lunch and then you turn around and ask it for directions to a restaurant, it kind of takes, I think, all these things into an account and sort of gets smarter about how it parses things. And that's where the real power is. And the demo, I mean, Scott Forrestal gave the demo and it was just kind of really cool to watch him build one thing on top of another. I think he gave an example where he got a text message from Phil and then he was asking about lunch and he was able to ask the calendar, hey, do I have a lunch appointment on this day, or I'd like to make a lunch appointment at this time. And if there's a conflict, it'll tell you back. And then you can say, oh, well then make it at 2:00. So you don't just sit, you have to say, you know, start the whole thing over. It's just, oh, I'm already booked at that time. Well, go ahead and make it for 2:00 the same day. And it will understand that. And that's where the real kind of power of this thing is. And that's really kind of unbelievable. And then on top of that, they have the dictation, the text to speech. And then, like you said, the other way, or the speech to text dictation and the text to speech. So it's sort of a whole package. And it looks like it's going to be iPhone 4S only. I thought it was nice that it's not just English. They're doing English, French, and German too when they launch it. So, and they're planning on bringing multiple languages. They were very, again, going back to the sort of marketing thing behind all of this, very quick to point out that it's in beta, although just as a beta technology, it's pretty impressive.
You know, one of the questions I had about that was how much of that is internet-based and how much of that's on board. It looked to me like just the dictation type stuff is internet-based, like the Drag and Dictate app works currently on the iPhone, where it sends your recording up and sends down the dictation.
Well, and I thought it was interesting that they didn't mention Nuance at all. And I know that Siri, it's right in there. I mean, they use the Nuance technology, so I have to imagine it's still using Nuance.
Right.
Well, who wants to share the limelight, you know? Apple doesn't, that's for sure.
Nuance also seems to want to, I mean, with the exception of a couple of products, really kind of wants to fly under the radar. It seems. I don't know if it's, I don't know why that is exactly, but yeah.
I think if you pay enough licensing, they're perfectly happy to let you not put them in the spotlight too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could be that. Could be that as well.
Well, the thing about Siri is, you know, the app came out and the app was pretty amazing. I think I wrote posts about it and showed it off to my friends. And at some point, you know, maybe 6 months later, it got moved to the second page, and now it's not on my phone. So as cool as it is, and I'm not sure why I stopped using it. So I'm a little, you know.
I think this is it. And this is the last thing that I want to bring up. And David, you kind of brought this up. And that's the question of, so with all this technology, with all this stuff with the iPhone 4S, you know, if you're an iPhone 3GS user, if you're an iPhone 4 user, I mean, what do you do? Do you upgrade? What? How do you? Where do you fall in all of this? And the thing about the Siri, to kind of answer your question, I think is what I was saying earlier. It's because it's integrated with Apple's applications. So I mentioned earlier, you know, reminders I hadn't given much thought to, but then they're showing, you know, the reminders thing. So you're setting an appointment, and then, you know, I need to bring some papers to that appointment. So, you know, set a meeting 8 a.m. on Monday with Scott, and then turn around and say, and also remind me when I leave the house that I need to bring the papers, right? And then it sets an iReminder with the geolocation fence so that when I get in my car and start driving away, it pops up and says, hey, remember to bring the papers. And if I don't have them, I go, oh, yeah, I got to get those papers.
Yeah, Apple's got a really slick video on Siri, and they've got, you know, they've got the blind lady returning, you know, text messages and all the necessary buttons pushed. And but one of them is the guy's driving home, and he says, remind me to pick up birthday gift when I get home. And then he pulls in his driveway, and then his phone says, get birthday gift.
Yeah, but it's that integration, and I think they kind of brought this up at the end of the whole thing. It's like, you know, we have all these technologies, and I think Tim Cook even summarized it this way. He said, but it's the integration of all this stuff, be it iCloud, be it the Siri technology, be it this, it's that it all kind of works together. And that is the key. That kind of what puts the Siri technology over the top versus the app. I mean, the app is great, but it's kind of autonomous, right? So it can't send a text message. It can't put something into my iCal calendar. It can kind of just do its own thing. So I think that's why it was great technology, but you could only use it in the app. So it was somewhat limited.
Well, I sound like a curmudgeon, but to be honest with you, I'm very excited about it too. Just see how it works. You know, I think it could be something that really changes the way you interact with your gizmo.
Okay, but does it sell phones? And I'm kind of in the camp that it does. So, you know, if I was an iPhone 4 owner, current iPhone 4 owner, and I am, and even, you know, I'm not technically eligible for upgrade until November, because I did check that, and that you can check through Apple's website now whether you can get the upgrade. But I'm offset with my wife. She has still has the 3GS, so she's eligible. So we're going to do the whole phone swap thing. So I'll be able to get it on launch day still. But as an iPhone 3GS or 4 owner, what do you guys think? I mean, it seems like there's enough in here to be worth the upgrade, even just between the camera and upgrade and Siri.
Ken?
No, there's not. I mean, Siri is really exciting. I want somebody to explain to me, especially if it ends up being more web-based than we think or more server-based than we think. I'm curious why Siri is coming off my iPhone 4. I don't use it that often, but I'm curious why it's coming off the iPhone 4. I mean, is this a selling point?
I think it is. I mean, I think that's exactly what's going on. Because okay. It's obvious, like I said, I popped open the app today and I tried it out, and it works. You know, again, it doesn't have the integration with the apps, which I think is the killer feature. But just in terms of the tech part of it, you know, it parsing my language and doing things that it can do, it seems to work just as well on my iPhone 4 as what I was seeing in Forrestal's demo.
See, if it would work just as well on the iPhone 4, then this feels like it feels a little bit more like being hosed than in the past. I mean, Apple's never been shy about saying, I'm sorry, your machine will not support this. But it's going to be a bad experience for you if we try to make it. So we're just not going to let it do that. That's one thing.
The tech part that I think is maybe not working and may require the processor is the text-to-speech portion. Although the iPhone 4 does that with VoiceOver. So that's probably a misnomer. And I think it's the same voice.
See, and this is the part I want somebody who can actually hold Apple's feet to the fire to hold their feet to the fire on it, because trying to force people who cannot upgrade without paying full price feels kind of bogus. You know what I mean? I mean, this is because you're right. Siri is the selling point for the iPhone 4S. Does the S stand for speed? Does the S stand for sprint? Does the S stand for Siri?
Speech.
Does the S stand for we couldn't call it G? Because we're not 4G yet. Yeah, it could stand for speech too. I mean, it's if it is possible to run it on the iPhone 4, then it should be running on the iPhone 4. Because what I was saying on the Mac Roundtable earlier is most people who are buying iPhones right now don't seem to care. They don't seem to care which iPhone it is. They just want the latest iPhone because the iPhone's late and people are still buying it in droves. They're still selling more each month. It's still the top selling phone. Common sense told us all that starting in June, iPhone 4 sales were going to go down because people knew that there was an iPhone something else coming soon, be it a 4S or a 5. And that hasn't happened. I mean, the people who are going into buying iPhones right now, I mean, just, I mean, there are still going to be people who are going to go in and buy an iPhone 4 tomorrow.
It's funny you say that. I just talked to a guy today and he said, yeah, I bought an iPhone. And I said, well, you know, the new one just came out. He said, yeah, I knew it was coming out, but my phone broke and I needed a new phone and I wanted an iPhone. I thought that was very interesting because I wouldn't have done it, but
yeah,
just like that's the phone I wanted and that's what I got.
And so, yeah. So, I mean, that's the one thing that bothers me is if it is something that can actually work on my phone and I just can't have it because I was the dumb schmuck who bought, you know, who bought a phone last year. I mean, then that's kind of a drag.
Yeah, but Apple's done that before.
At the same time, it's not enough of a reason for me to, I mean, I'm not going to, I mean, I'm in sort of the trading situation that you have as well in my home. Although I'm thinking I'm not going to claim the iPhone 4S because as neat as Siri is, I'm not going to use it that much. I mean, as long as I can try it out, I feel like it'll be, you know, I'll understand what it's about without having to, you know, feel like I'm missing something for, you know, the various shows or things that I do.
Yeah.
It seems to me Siri is going to be one of those word of mouth things. I mean, I'm sure they'll have some great commercials on it. In fact, they already have one on the website. But I think if your buddy shows up and starts using it in front of you, mm-hmm. That's going to be the thing that drives Siri as a sales force. But and just to answer the question in generic, you know, terms, I think if you're up for an upgrade, then this is a good upgrade. I mean, it's a better, yep. much better camera. I mean, particularly, I think the 3GS people, if you have the new iPhone 4 and you're not, you know, a nerd like us, then you probably can wait.
Yeah, I mean, because it's not like Siri is exclusive to the iPhone 4S. I mean, it gets introduced in the iPhone 4S, and as long as it works and doesn't take over the world like Skynet, I mean, it's here from now on. So if you don't get it this year, you'll get it next year when it's time for you to upgrade.
Or when it's copied on your Android or Windows Phone 8 phone.
Well, there's a reason Apple bought Siri, you know. I mean, they didn't want it going to other devices. So while they may copy it, it's not Siri. The underlying technology is not going to be somewhere else.
Right. But, and there's head start there, too, that this is not one of those technologies that somebody quickly catches up on, I don't think.
It is interesting, you know, the iPad has an A5 processor, and it has a lot of memory, and it has iOS 5, and it doesn't have Siri, at least not as I understand it. You know,
yeah, what's up with that? I don't know. I mean, Anatko answered a question about that on Twitter saying, do you understand how difficult it would be to hold up, you know, hold it up to your mouth and push the button and all this stuff. And I'm like, that's dumb. I mean, I could put a headset into it, or I could, right. Or I could do Bluetooth, or I could, you know, just yell at it.
I mean, as a writer, I could just sit there and dictate to my iPad and let it type for me. Oh man, I'd have a headset on in no time flat.
Well, okay. So that wasn't clear though. They didn't really show how much time. And I have a feeling it's going to work like the Dragon Dictate app where you can only do X number of seconds, right?
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah. That's my assumption that you're going to have a limit. I mean, Siri works like that now too. Just the Siri app, I think it can take, you know, 10, 15 seconds. I believe the Dragon Dictate app takes up to 30 seconds. Is that right? I haven't used it in a while.
Well, I would hope that, you know, a benefit of integrating it into the iOS is that you don't have those limitations. But
well, it has to send the file up to the server, though. You got to imagine it's creating an audio file. So if you record, you know, 10 minutes, it's going to take how long for that to upload to the server to get parsed unless they can somehow sort of, you know, stream it up. I don't know. There does become a technical challenge when you're doing the parsing on the server side. And like Ken was saying earlier, I'm pretty sure all of the dictation stuff is still happening on the server.
You make good points.
Yeah. Well, we'll know, but it certainly could be on the iPad. As somebody pointed out, it, well, here's the thing. We will know if Siri is being used purely to sell upgrades to new devices if they don't put it on the iPad 2 and it shows up on the iPad 3 next year.
Oh, good point, that.
Right.
Yeah, and I bet you a nickel that's exactly what's going to happen.
I'll bet you more than a nickel.
I'm gonna get a time machine and then go back in time and just rail on this show.
Well, you can do that. In the meantime, I think people can contact you directly or find you over at macosken.com and on day six, right?
Macosken.com, and actually join me on. I do a live show.
Oh, the live show.
Watching this, the live show every Wednesday night. 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific at justin.tv/macosken. Best way to keep up with that is to follow me on Twitter, which is twitter.com/macosken. And I take, you know, we take calls. So anything that's going on in Apple News, like this week, we're talking about everything that was announced on the Let's Talk iPhone event. Yeah. Other weeks, it's other things, whatever the news happens to be. And sometimes we go off news entirely and talk about gift ideas or which tech story is really annoying you the most. So call in. It's free and it's fun.
It is a lot of fun. I'm really sad because I'm always busy at that time and I can't make it out. But
I'll be honest with you. I am also sad that I'm going to have to like corner you for one Wednesday night to have you definitely come.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do it because it is a great show. And, you know, plus George is there and he's a great guy.
Yes, he is.
You know, another thing, Ken, you know, your morning show is just so awesome. And what really makes it even better for me now is I use Instacast to download wirelessly my shows. So I can wake up and while I'm brushing my teeth, you know, Mac OS Ken shows up on my iPhone. And in the 10 or 15 minutes it takes to listen to your show as I drive in, I get all the news I need for the day. I just think it's awesome. Thank you.
Wow. Dude, maybe that's it. I need to just do it and listen when I'm in the shower.
You and Barry Folk, not that you're in the shower together. He does that too. And he tells me every time. And it's like, dude, you could really not tell me that anymore and I'll be okay. Yeah. So feel free to listen in the shower and also feel free not to tell me that you listen in the shower.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe safe instruction there.
So
thank you. I'm sorry, really. Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. That's very, yeah, and this is the part where I don't know what to say after that.
I just think it's great.
Well, this is where you say, and we should also be listening to Dave Sparks and Katie Floyd over at Mac Power Users, and you're now on 5x5, which that's just amazing. Congratulations on that.
Thanks. It's really an honor to be around those guys. There's some real smart people there.
Yeah, and we're also all on the Mac Roundtable. Oh, I need to mention your book, David.
Yes, I just had a new book come out called iPad at Work. It's 350 pages of anal retentive workflows, app recommendations, and other ways to be productive on your iPad.
And I think just this last weekend when we were in Petaluma, it came out on the iBookstore, right?
Yeah, it's out on the iBookstore. It's out on Kindle, and you can get it in Barnes & Noble. I had the pleasure of going into a Barnes & Noble store and seeing my book on the shelf, which is pretty exciting.
Hey. Because it took a while for the last one to get in there, right?
Yeah, the iPad at Work book is bigger than Mac at Work was because the iPad is, you know, the big thing now.
Oh, it's the big hot thing.
So there's a lot of people getting into that.
Well, so people should go into Barnes & Noble, grab your book, or get it off the iBookstore, and then check you out on Mac Power Users. And all of us occasionally over on Mac Roundtable. It sounds like you guys were just on talking about all this stuff there as well. So if you want to get even more of this sort of thing, then catch those guys there. And I want to thank both of you for coming and hanging out for about an hour and almost an hour and a half now. So thanks. So there you go, David Sparks and Ken Ray. Always fun to talk to those guys. And especially when we have a big announcement like a new iPhone. I'm very excited. I'm planning on pre-ordering mine on the 7th. And will hopefully have the option to go in and pick it up. I know they've done that in the past, so I'm planning on being at my local Apple store, probably the Carlsbad store up here on October 14th. So if you're out there, I'll be running around in line, talking to people, and just soaking up all of the excitement of a new Apple product launch. And that's going to do it for today. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment, thank all of my show sponsors. Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. You can check out their software, get more information and details at circusponies.com. Pharonix, be sure to check out Deep Freeze. You can get more information and details on that over at pharonix.com. Smile, they make text expander, PDF pen, disk label. You can check out all their software, get more information and free trials over at smilesoftware.com. And Gazelle, see if you can get some cash for your old iPhone. Maybe subsidize that new one. You can find more information and details and do a search over at gazelle.com. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the MacCast. Big thank you to you for your support of the MacCast. Love to get your thoughts and opinions and comments on the iPhone 4 announcements, any of the other announcements that happened on Tuesday. You can send your thoughts, your emails, your comments to MacCast@gmail.com or call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9, or leave voicemail on Skype. My Skype address is the MacCast. Also, be sure to check out the MacCast.com website. There you'll find show notes and links to things that I've talked about on this and other episodes of the MacCast. And while you're there, be sure to check out the MacCast forum at forum.maccast.com. Great place to hang out with some other members of your MacCast community, get answers to your questions, and just talk about Mac things in general. I'm sure there'll be some conversations about today's announcements, so you can check that out. If you'd like to follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMacCast. That's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.